This is the Saxo Market Call, daily insights on what is moving the financial markets.
Hello and welcome to the Saxo Market Call. It is Tuesday, 24th of August, 2021. What an explosion higher in equity markets. We have Asia following through as well overnight, but the big action was yesterday. In the U.S., you see all the normal headline writers scrambling for attribution here, and I think it's pretty thin evidence on that account. A couple things being, and one of the main things being this COVID drug approval, so the Pfizer vaccine being fully approved. In other words, status changing from that emergency approval status, which means that some of these mandates, vaccine mandates, will have effect when it's not being, when it doesn't only have that emergency status. So that's probably the key driver here as well. A big comeback in Asia overnight, Peter. And we have the NASDAQ 100 on slide two in today's slide deck. And I mean, some of the action yesterday, to me, it smacks of, you know, looking around for attribution. You can see various articles and commentary from those that are very involved in the derivative space that suggest to me there's a lot of this is thin liquidity and maybe driven by the lifting of hedges, et cetera. We've shown the patterns. It's more evident in the S&P 500, where every time it touched near that 50, 55-day moving average, it came screaming back higher to the trend. This time, it didn't quite get to that moving average before it did the same thing. There are some breadth problems, but this was a pretty crazy day. What's your take on things here?
It was a well, I think the last 4 days, when we came off last week's increased nervousness, how much of an impact from the Delta variant, etc. We had the Chinese slowdown, the crackdown. Sentiment was not very good. And then we've bounced back. So on Friday, we had a very big volume day. And on Thursday, we had a big volume day. And Friday was much lower. And then, yes, as you said, yesterday's big price action, so new all-time lows, if you take the NASDAQ index.
New all-time highs, I think you mean, right?
What did I say?
You said lows.
All-time highs. Sorry, of course. But it was on a very low volume day, as you mentioned. And as you can see on slide two, the different theme basket was really the usual suspects: bubble stocks, 3D printing, next-gen medicine, cannabis, really the hyper-tuned growth, high beta. And on the flip side, we had lower volatility. So financial trading basket was the worst performer. I don't know why India's down there, but it is. So the big turnaround, the big story, and has been the big story for quite some time, is China, not only because of its macro influence on the world and the slowdown that is taking place, but also this technology crackdown. And yesterday we had big earnings numbers from JD.com. They beat expectations on revenue. Earnings per share was much stronger. And that caused Cathie Wood and ARK Invest to flip. So back in July, they offloaded all their JD.com shares, and she just recently, within the less of a week, have said on TV that she didn't like Chinese technology because of what was happening, etc. And now she's turning 180 degrees and buying back into JD.com. That lifted the market's mood, and you have Tencent announcing a big shares buyback, and we have Antasports, which is China's their version of Nike, reporting pretty strong revenue numbers as well for the first half of the first half year result this morning in China. So you see Hang Seng Tech Index, slide three, up 7.6%. So everyone is in a good mood, but I have a little bit of a warning later into the podcast.
All right, we'll wait for that warning. In the meantime, something like FX to round up my space, very much aligned with this risk sentiment comeback, as we discussed yesterday. So on slide four, showing Aussie dollar, for example, the Aussie has been one of the weakest currencies, or probably the weakest currency in G10 last week to 2 weeks. And we see that the scale of that sell-off there in Aussie dollar, you can see on the chart there, we've recovered about half of that. You would probably need to see it above 73 and even 73.50 to argue that we've seen a full reversal. And I would like for that to be sticking beyond the Jackson Hole appearance from Fed Chair Powell later this week. Something like Dollar Canada has reversed more of its price action from a massive move in crude oil. And we'll get to oil on that shortly. But you can see how the momentum changes in the FX board on the right. It's the second line below the actual trend readings have really, of course, shifted in line with what you're seeing on that Aussie dollar chart. No major surprise there. Also interesting to see the dollar weakness feeding into gold strength. So a pretty solid move, $25 plus in gold yesterday. But of course, the focus this week is on that Jackson Hole conference. We're talking about there's endless liquidity out there, and we have something like this repo facility from the Fed we've talked endlessly about, growing another $25 billion in a single day yesterday. Ironically, I'll say at a time when we're hearing or liquidity is quite poor for those treasury traders out there that want to do some volume. What are your thoughts here on the treasury market and on that liquidity, et cetera, as we're heading into Jackson Hole?
Well, John, I believe that liquidity is high in the front part of the yield curve, and that is translated with the reverse repurchase facility. But on the long part of the yield curve, that's where traders have difficulties. And the reason why we have very little liquidity right now on 5 year plus is that, need to ask spread hit the widest level at the beginning of August. Basically, was the bid and ask spread was the widest since 5 months before. Now there is a little bit of improvement, but still we don't see traders taking large positions because obviously yields dropped considerably. And entering with 10 years at 1.25, when we are still uncertain how the tapering and the Fed is going to behave in the upcoming months, is becoming really tricky. So I want to take you on slide 5. What can we expect at the moment entering in a week, which has the Jackson Hole on Saturday? Well, 10 years US Treasuries, they are still stable around 1.25 because we are seeing a lot of demand in the front part of the curve, and the RRP facility hitting new records almost daily. Well, we can see the 10-year yields dropping still, and maybe dropping as low as 1% before resuming its rise. But I think that it's very important to time the drop and to time the rise. So short-term drivers right now are Delta variant, market liquidity, growth worries, and this is what is basically pushing yields lower. But in autumn, we are going to have a change of drivers within the bond market because we are going to talk about tapering, a cut of US Treasuries issuance in the front part of the yield curve. And maybe because we have seen a slowdown in the third part on the third quarter of the year, probably we are going to see an accelerated growth on the fourth, on the last part of the year. So basically that can bring alive the reflation trade. And this is what traders are looking at the moment.
And then over in Europe, we have these bonds that have gone down to such incredibly low levels, minus 50 basis points or so at the recent lows, not quite as low as they got back in 2020 and even before the pandemic, ironically. And don't forget that we hit below minus 60 basis points back in 2019 before there was anything known about COVID-19. Are we just dead in the water? Have we reached some kind of absolute low? What's your outlook for European sovereigns?
Well, I believe that at this point, if traders are looking to short bonds, they should look at the bunds for the simple reason that the drop that we have seen in yields has been driven mainly by the drop of US Treasuries. And as you can see on slide 6, the correlation between US Treasuries and bunds has risen close to 1 since May until today. So now these two securities are particularly correlated. If we see US Treasury yields pointing higher, then we will certainly see bunds reversing their trend. And those 25 basis points that they dropped by during summer, they can basically easily be gained back.
All right, we'll look for that. And as well, I think on the bond yield note, it's important to think about the German election. We talked about that yesterday. It was the momentum we're seeing in the SPD. So the Social Democrats in Germany, it really looks like we are heading towards something some kind of government that would contain Social Democrats plus the Greens, a very different attitude towards Europe and potentially towards the fiscal side on spending than anything that might have been involving the CDU, CSU bloc. So we'll definitely have to watch for that. Ole Hansen, Mr. Patience on the other end there. We saw a very big move in crude oil yesterday. What is this, a major reversal? Are we posted a low, or are we just not, are we not quite there yet?
Well, it's if it is a low, then it's a level where we have been looking for, that 65 area in Brent, as you can see on slide 7. I've written a double bottom, but you can almost call that a triple bottom, that that we've seen found support on several occasions in that, in that area, and the strong bounce yesterday took us straight back about 67.5. So that's sort of giving a bit of confidence back into the market. I think the market is responding to what Althea just said. Some of the focus there has resulted in the weaker dollar, which is supporting the market. At the same time, also, we over the weekend China reported the first day without any new cases, and that's clearly a key concern, or has been a key concern for the market, the outlook for demand in China, the world's biggest importer. But I think we're not out of the woods yet. So sideways trading could potentially be what's on the agenda. We're facing resistance here in around the area where we train right now, and then above again at 70.65. But I put a small insert there. That's basically showing the percentage of ships looking for a cargo and not finding one in the Middle East to ship oil away from the Middle East. So right now there's a 34% overcapacity, and that's relatively high for this time of year. So it does indicate that the market is still in a not oversupplied, but at least not a tight market situation, which needs to be reduced. So we need to see whether Delta, the short-term impact, or whether it's going to be a short-term impact or not. We believe it is, and the demand is likely to pick up again as we head into the autumn. And you also mentioned gold, John. Big recovery yesterday, and again the weaker dollar, potential reduced taper worries ahead of Friday's Jackson Hole symposium, all helping to support gold. But I think also importantly, if you look on the right-hand side here on slide 8, we can see the link between the real yields and gold has really broken down during the past few months. And if that relationship is to be rekindled to back towards the kind of levels we saw in the past, then potentially gold could withstand a 20 to 30 basis point rally in real yields in the US. So that's also just worth keeping in mind. But for now, we're back to neutral, back above 1800, but we really need to break that 1830 line to talk about any kind of recovery, further recovery.
All right, and just to highlight your slide 9 there, just a chart pulled from the National Hurricane Center in the U.S., three storms potentially developing across the Atlantic could, of course, affect the supply equation on top of that in the U.S. Let's head back over to you, Peter. I think you've got some very interesting longer-term thoughts here on where the U.S. market is with its crazy extension here, and especially in valuation terms relative to EM. So I'll let you take it away.
Thanks, John. Yeah, sometimes we do need to get into the helicopter, and there have been a lot of talks about whether the last decade of emerging markets have come to an end. And what you see on slide 10 is basically the emerging markets total return index in dollars versus the MSCI World. As you can see here, we're down 55% from the relative peak back in 2010. So, and the last commodity rally, super cycle, if you will, from 2000 to 2010, early 11, give or take, was really the go-go years for emerging market. That has been pretty sad experience ever since. And, you know, Goldman Sachs and other banks, we have talked, flirted a little bit with the idea, you and I, all about this whole super cycle. What does the green transformation mean for emerging markets and the price for commodities, etc., climate change, what have you. And my viewpoint is that two things needs to happen. I don't think that the revival of the emerging markets index can happen without China. China is more than 50% of the index. I think it's 60 or 65. It has to come with China being, you know, deliver on the earnings growth and getting the valuations back. So the current technology crackdown is obviously not helping on that situation. But even more importantly, and that's what you touch upon, John, slide 11, EM could stage a comeback in relative terms, at least, if the US, which is 60% of MSCI World, becomes more, you know, see more weakness over time. And I've put in this, we have these valuation metrics indices, C-scores, so they standardize. We use 7 different valuation metrics. And as you can see here, the US, the S&P, it's actually the MSCI, the MSCI USA index. So it's a pretty, it's the broadest index you can get on the US equity market. So it includes all the small caps as well, although their weight is much smaller. And as you can see here, we are firmly above 2 standard deviations expensive, or at least above the average since 1995. And it really makes the dot-com period pale in comparison. And I should have put it in this chart as well, but if you take the valuation, if you take all these valuation levels and then you look at 10-year forward returns and you use this period, what you find out is that when we're at the current levels, the probability of the US equity market delivering a positive real rate return is probably as low as only 1 or 2%. So there's a very, very, very low probability that we will get a very strong rally over the next 10 years in US equities, at least adjusted for inflation.
Can I just butt in with 2 points here? And I think it's really important. And I think part of that valuation has to be obviously what you've already mentioned, and that is the big tech companies in the U.S. that have those monopolies and platforms that China is cracking down on. I guess the U.S. could see, and other geographies that are affected by these U.S. companies and the profits that they extract could be affected by a crackdown as well. So that could be one relative trade. And the other one being back on the slide 10 with your EM chart, I'm sure absolutely no coincidence that the dollar bottomed out in 2011. Not far after the peak, very peak in that chart. The dollar is a critical element. A dollar weakening would be a critical element of EM outperformance, at least from my currency traders' view on things. And then I'll let you take away on the earnings, which are still quite busy this week, especially, to a degree in China.
Yeah, it's very much a Chinese focus. There's a little bit of U.S. tech. We had JD.com reporting yesterday, much better than expected earnings. I've talked about Antisports reporting. I have already reported in the Chinese session strong earnings. And then we have been Duadua reporting later today in the U.S. session. I've put in their share price to the right. We are on slide 12, by the way. And you know that stock price is down more than 50%. It's just staggering. The change in sentiment in Chinese technology stocks. And I think that's part of the reason. When you look at a chart like this, I think you're getting to levels where there at least some tactical traders are making very, very aggressive bets here, where they think the risk reward ratio obviously is attractive on a very, very short time horizon. It could be only a couple of months. I don't think the overall underlying currents in the Chinese market are over yet. We still have that very important Chinese political event next year, which will likely cement Xi Jinping as a long-term leader for China. So that, I think there's politically a lot of things going on in China, and that I think you should see this regulatory crackdown in that light. Tomorrow we have Xiaomi, also a Chinese. It's a consumer-oriented company. It's their version of Apple to some extent, although they don't have the same ecosystem, but they definitely are the Apple on the hardware side. We have Salesforce and Snowflake and Autodesk tomorrow on U.S. technology sector. And then Thursday, Delivery Hero, which is one of the darlings here in Europe. We have Workday and Peloton Interactive on the U.S. tech scene on Thursday. And then Xpeng in the U.S. session, but it's an electric vehicle company in China. And then Friday, we'll close the week off with BYD, which is the Warren Buffett darling. I think Berkshire has around 25% of the shares in BYD, and they have chosen a very different strategy on battery-driven cars in China, but so far has been extremely successful. And then we have Trip.com, the travel agency company I mentioned last week, that was down 42% from recent highs, as you know, China was doing a lot of very harsh measures to contain the different community spreads they had of COVID-19.
Quite a lot going on there. And the macro calendar, a bit quieter, but a couple of interesting points there. On slide 13, I have the overview. Today, we get the Hungarian Central Bank, a little bit interesting there because we're expecting a 30 basis point hike. This is a continuation of the string of hikes we've seen from them to bring the rate to 1.5%. Their most recent CPI data point was slightly lower than expected, but still running at 4.5%, if I recall correctly. year on year and 0.5% month on month. So still the month on month rate is still running at something like a 6% annual. So your negative real yield's quite powerful there, but they're rolling out that still rather hawkish message. And it looks like the market is confident that CPI will start to come down, the Hungarian forint trading towards the strong end of the range against the euro. So quite interesting to see how the market treats that reaction. Bits and pieces out of the U.S., July new home sales. Watching the housing market in the U.S., the momentum is really coming out, according to many of the indicators. So we'll be watching that, as well as the latest weekly oil inventory reports in the commodity space. And then, of course, everything, all eyes on the Friday Jackson Hole conference speech from Fed Chair Powell. I will cover some of the expectations around that. I don't want to, we've got a couple more days, so I think I'll wait for some of the comments I've been reading on what is expected there. Clearly, the tapering message is expected, but there are a lot of hemming and hawing around the degree to which this COVID outbreak will give the Fed pause and not want to make them pre-commit too much. And in any case, with that $1.135 trillion now at the Fed's repo facility, it really isn't about the taper from the Fed, because they have some getting close to 10 months of full QE left simply from this, from the buildup in this facility, even if they were to stop buying treasuries tomorrow. So we'll be watching for that, as well as whether this crazy extension can continue to find momentum or sees a sudden stop in momentum. I suspect we'll have a hard time maintaining the kind of momentum we've seen the last cut, or certainly yesterday, but we'll see. We'll be back tomorrow with the next Saxo Market Call.
Thanks for listening. This has been the Saxo Market Call. For feedback and questions, reach out to us on Twitter at Saxo Market Call, or by email, marketcall@saxobank.com.